This is Kevin Sharp, and I'm here with Tyler T. Rex Baker, Joe Amato, and Nathan Kennedy, and we're on Fans of Power.
Yeah, see, you did it. It was fine. It was fine.
Not bad at all, dude. Not bad at all. Looking sharp there, man. Wah, wah,
wow.
Wah.
He really felt the pressure, too, because as soon as we told him that he had to do the intro, he was like, no. Jeez.
Yeah.
You did fine. You just think about Joe and his deals with the underwear. Joe, tell everyone out there what you're telling us about, especially if they have those stores near them, how they can get cheap shirts and underoos and pants and whatnot.
One of my thrifty tips, was it Tyler or was it you that said, you know, you can have like a little thrifty tips or something? But here, this is what you can do. If you got a Shopper's World in your area, I went to Shopper World. I got two T-shirts. They're just both solid colors. Got a each shirt was $2, so $4. $5, I got myself a pair of jeans. And then for $1, I got a two-pack of socks. So $10, you can dress yourself, minus the underwear. That's the only thing I want to buy that's actually good at places. But when it comes to other clothes, it's cheap. So if you're on a tight budget, like I used to say about going for the subscriptions for the figures, you can get some clothes, $10 and under, you're good to go. And I can't see, I'll just let you know, I can't see a thing right now. So Tyler could be sitting back probably like this, just shaking his head, rolling his eyes. Nope. I don't know what he's doing,
I do have that same mindset. Like, I'm just like, come ready to call out Joe. Like, he's trying to tell you how to live cheap and be cost efficient and buy He-Man figures, but he didn't buy any classic figures for like the last 3-4 years. So whatever he's suggesting clearly doesn't work.
This is the battle not plan, more. So you can save money for those Thundercats classics that Super 7 is releasing. And there you go.
And Turtles.
Yeah, which I want to get Kevin's thoughts because Kevin is a diehard Thundercat fanatic. What's your take on the announcement of 16 new figures coming up plus the re-release of the previous ones?
I would say, well, I'm really excited. I like that they gave you extras that weren't in the original releases. I like there were some corrections on like the Sword of Omens. I really dug options on the claw shield. I wasn't bothered by the claw shield personally. Just
I wasn't either.
Yeah, you know, on the original release, it was nice, but it didn't look like the cartoon. So I could understand some fans being a little, you know, it's like, hey, and really the Four Horsemen are badass. There's no reason why they couldn't deliver a cartoon accurately one, you know, and I think it's really cool. I think it was personally a little disappointing that we couldn't have gotten maybe just one new character in the wave to order because it had been such a long wait and everybody had been clamoring for it. So I think on that end, I think that the it could have been better. I'm not saying it was bad. I'm really excited and I'm pushing for it and I've already ordered my figures, but I definitely, if I was in the meeting room with Super 7, I say, you gotta get them at least one new figure. Get them hyped, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's the people that already bought them from Mattel, and there'd be some people that were kind of on the fence about buying another figure that you've already got or maybe got two copies of. Like, I've got two of the Lion-O, and so now I'd have a third one.
Well,
so,
hey, Kevin, you feel free to just send me that other one if you want. That's no pressure, but, you know.
Hey, we'll talk about it off air then. And so, you know, and if you hear any weird noises off in the background, there's...
What is that?
I think it's a bird. It sounds like a bird.
Yeah, it's my cockatiel, or the cockatiel here. It once it starts hearing,
is he possessed by the devil or something? Because that's some scary shit. I thought I was picking up some weird messages. I was like, I'm not saying nothing yet because nobody else is.
We should have played along into that and just been like, when Joe's like, is anyone else hearing that? It's just like, no, man, what are you talking about? And he thinks he's starting to hear voices.
It wouldn't have sold me because I'm like, what is it? Because I was like, I can't be the only one hearing that. Like, I'm just.
Me too.
Like my head's going to shake, and Michael Ironside is going to walk in and make my head blow up.
Fans of Power Jungle Edition.
Exactly.
Special guest Kevin Sharp.
He'll be silent all day, but he hears you guys talking, and when I'm recording, of course, he's going to pipe in and start talking. So, but yeah, I mean, as far as the Thundercats goes, I'm really excited, and I think it's great for the people that didn't get it first time around. I wish there was one other figure. That's all I'd say. It's the only criticism I'd say to them is I wish there was another figure, but they're giving you extras, and I'm like, okay, cool, I can deal with that. I'm still not in love with the price point on it, yeah. But, you know.
Yeah, it's more than what Mattel's asking for. I mean, for me, if, you know, and I'm hoping maybe the box art with me, I was telling Nathan, if it was something like vintage style, like the black card with the chrome lettering and some nice pictures of, like, you know, kind of like the original LGN card back was, you know, I'd be more apt, like, I can't really afford any, as long as I, you know, you can buy these individually, right?
Yeah. You can get these. It's not like the it doesn't appear to be on the website, and I've already ordered. And it doesn't appear to be that you have to order the case first, then get, you know, the single figures. You can get the single figures right off the bat.
Oh, is that the same for the Turtles, too? Do you know if Turtles is doing the same thing? Just you can buy one figure if you want, or?
I don't know. I don't think they've said.
I think they just plan on release or doing something similar to Thundercats, like four figures per per quarter, kind of like what they're doing with Thundercats. So I'd imagine that they're always about selling a set. Like, you can't buy individual stuff, at least nothing that the Horsemen do.
Well, I was going to say, if you wanted to bypass Super 7 and buy them individually, I would imagine Big Bad Toy Store would have them to where you could buy them individually as well. But I know that they have planned this initial 16-figure run, but I think they also said, and you guys can correct me on this, that there are 16 more that they want to do after they're done with this. So we'll see where that goes.
If that were the case, that would pretty much cover the vintage line and then some. Like, I hadn't counted it, but I mean, at least 16 figures would wrap up the core Thundercat group, all the mutants, and then you could throw in, like, the Berserkers, the Lunatics, characters like Captain Cracker, Captain Shiner, Safari Joe, Mongor. You kind of feel like it would be, like, I don't know what they could throw at us. So that makes it quite exciting, and I like to think that that's kind of locked in. And but I was also glad too, because not to harp on like what we've already done before, but it was nice to know too, because we've discussed this before, that, you know, these people are releasing the same figures again. It's hard to get excited and pass the word around and spread the good word and the news about, hey, those figures that we've already got, they're being released again. Isn't it great? So that's why I was glad at least they made a point to say 60 more are coming, because I feel like people have a right to be upset when you're campaigning for a line like that to keep coming back, and we got the same damn thing again. So why can't Mattel learn from that? But anyway, we're not going back into that Vietnam. And just so you know, Nathan's viewpoints from last week were just strictly to antagonize me.
Yes and no. Part of it was to give that fresh perspective, because, you know, I don't want us to always agree on everything, and I guess it was kind of nice to throw out the hardball questions of, like, well, yeah, but what about this? And then Tyler's just getting angrier and angrier at me. But, I mean, it's fun, of course, but I just want to give that different approach. Like, oh, okay, well, this is how you guys feel about it. And in some cases, I didn't really have just, like, a solid, this is exactly how I feel about all of this, because when it came to the books that were announced, and you're like, well, you can see this online and everything, I'm like, yeah, not wrong. But at the same time too, if you're looking at it from a perspective of someone that wants to get into it, maybe doesn't know where they can go to find stuff, they can have it all in one place in a book, and it's something they can go back and look over time and time again. And it's just and some people are like that. They want to have, like, a physical thing in their hand to look at, and not so much, like, do everything on the internet. So it's got its positives, and it also has its negatives, like most of this stuff does.
I would have preferred, because Joe's mentioned it before, and Kevin, I'm sure he could probably, you know, like, release the comic books, like the Star Comics or the Golden Book stories in a nice big compendium. Compilation book, something that's, or the UK annuals, or I mean, I just feel like there's so many things that have not been announced or shown on a wide scale to the public like that. I feel like that should have been like the next step, like a book of just toys. You know, I kind of feel like, you know, but because I've been with this for so long, buying all kinds of magazines like Lee's Toy Review and Tone Warts, and I've lost Kevin's interest. He's just got up and left in the middle of the podcast.
Did he?
All right. Well, I'll finish my thought, and hopefully we can get him back.
He's like, piss off. He's like,
he's ranting around.
Sorry, guys.
Saying shit.
I'm just trying to distract the bird. I was sorry about that. He gets loud, so I apologize.
Are you describing?
When it comes to that, all of that is good, and I want to bring up too, because I'm already getting some messages here asking if there is a podcast live tonight, and we just sort of decided collectively, which I probably should have addressed this at the beginning or made a video a couple of days ago to post. I think for now, at least for now, it's in the best interest for us to record it, because there won't be distractions. I won't have to sit here and worry about frames dropping or the stream constantly going offline if we're going to lose parts of the conversation that just get lost to the ether, because Tyler started on a rant last week, and part of that is just gone because the stream went offline for a little bit, and you guys missed that, and I don't want people to miss out on anything. And, we will have the interactivity, because my plan is to post and premiere this tomorrow night, and I think going forward, Mondays at 8 o'clock, Joe, is that the time that you were thinking about?
Yes. Eastern time,
yeah, yes. Mondays at 8 o'clock Eastern, I will set it as a premiere, and there will still be a chat room, but the thing is, I think after that, the chat will disappear, because that's just how premieres work on YouTube. So when you guys have questions like you do, and like the segment that we'd have at the end of the show, make sure you comment down below on the video with your questions, and the following week we will make sure to ask those and answer them appropriately. All right.
I don't know if we may even start the show with answering questions. So,
We'll figure it out as we go along. Yeah. And this is not to say that this is like the end of the live show, because if I can figure out what is causing this issue to consistently happen and we can fix it, then we can go back to normal probably, but just for now, this is what we're gonna do, so don't freak out too much. We're still here, you still got the show, damn it.
Yep.
All right,
but if you got stuff you want to ask us, you're gonna have to send it to us in advance, so we can't do any more on the fly right now, so just we will get it all taken care of, just not the way it's used to it, but tonight's big topic is pretty much, it's one topic, but we got three people here talking about it. Nathan, you can chime in whenever you want, or you can take off.
I'll go ahead and take off.
Lick the cat's butt or whatever it is you want to do there.
Don't have any cats in the house, man.
I'm quoting Wayne's World, though. That's a Wayne's World quote. I'm doing my movie quotes early here. Does anyone know that quote? I know all of you guys have seen Wayne's World.
I've seen it. Definitely seen it.
Yeah, we've all seen it. Or, well, maybe Joe hasn't. But we've all seen it.
Oh, I've not. I've seen it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know Mike Myers is not Italian. He's Canadian, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just didn't know the quote. Yeah, I'm terrible at those. But, yeah, we're going to do, it's our top 10 Filmation episodes. And for whatever various reasons, we chose them. But I think, if anything, we won't have to, like, I'm not going to just run down all 10 of mine and Tyler and Kevin. Figure we'll mix it up, like, one goes to one, another, another. So, Kevin, since you're our guest, how about you start off with one of your picks of your top 10?
All right, one of my picks of my top 10. Well, the in no particular order, I'll start with Evil Seed. And I know a lot of people, it's very controversial or whatever you want to say. It's I dug it because it was like a horror kind of, it had some horror movie tropes in the episode. And, I dug the character. I like the scene with where, you know, you're in Castle Grayskull and Sorceress is on there. And then the tentacle comes out of
That was creepy. Yeah.
The jump scare thing. And so, you know, that was really cool. sorry. And, Man, I have had so many live streaming problems in the last couple of weeks.
It's like a John Wood movie sounds, over there with like doves flying around.
Yeah. You can hear that flapping. Your bird sounds pissed or he wants to be part of the show.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that would be that's probably my one of the big ones for me was that it was a character that wasn't part of the line. And then they did it, you know. Some people hated his face. I kind of dug it because it was creepy.
I loved it.
I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And so I thought he was an awesome character. And I just thought it was neat as a kid that it was a far more creepier episode than he expected. And, you know, they just made him really ugly and horrific. And I was like, you know, it just had a cool vibe. So that's my choice, one of my choices in my top 10.
What'd you think about the teaming up, you know, with the heroes and, you know, Skeletor towards the end where they had to, you know, try to do what they had to do to stop Evil Seed? What did you think of team ups? I always got a kick out of that, but I was curious what you thought.
Exactly. It was awesome. You got to see, you know, the comedy part of Skeletor a little bit more there with him hiding under the table in Snake Mountain and you know, begging He-Man to help him. He's finally like, I'm not, you know, there was one of those lines in there is like, it was like Merman, and he goes, if there's a good bone in your body, and Skeletor is like, you know, there isn't, never was, never will be. And, you know, I love that. That was one of my favorite things about it. I was like, just no matter what, Skeletor is not going to do anything good if he can help it. So yeah, that's a great point. And I really love that episode.
Did you find it creepy how he withered away at the end, almost, you know, like dying? Because it was something you usually didn't see in a cartoon. But even, you know, I know, like, you look at it like thinking, okay, well, he could die because he's kind of a plant character, so it doesn't really count. But for me, it was kind of a little traumatic. It was creepy seeing somebody dying on the screen in a cartoon.
Yeah, the animations and stuff, it kind of recalled, I'm not saying this, but I guess with their use of, well, they weren't using rotoscoping in that scene, but it was something that kind of felt like those old, was something creepy about it, sort of like in the way his animations were. It was almost like the old Lord of the Rings cartoons or something like that. It made me feel like there was
a lot more detail put into it. It was not just a standard like footage. Like, I mean, cause some stuff that it's like they can't feel, but like, look, if we're going to do this, we're going to have to step outside the box and really animate something brand new that we're probably never going to use again. So if we're going to do it, let's just go all out, because his death is pretty epic, and it's so well done. I mean, it's just a detailed, the monologue to it as he's dying, withering away. I mean, they put a lot of thought into it, because God, it looks good. That's why another prime example, when people like to shit on Filmation because they didn't either grow up with it or they think they're a funny asshole for dumping on it. Nobody can argue with that bit of animation from that one episode.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I mean, you've nailed every aspect of it. It's just, they took their time on it, and the you know, just the gestures and things like that, it was just cool. And that always stuck with me. So that is definitely one of my top 10.
Well, it was in mine, too, so I'm just going to scratch it since I joined in about it. So that is one of my top 10, but I've already discussed with you. So Tyler, what's one of your top 10? And then after you, I'll go to a different one of mine.
Well, to give people a little backstory on why we're doing this, this came out many, many years ago, which was the top 10 episodes. Kevin, did you vote on this when this came out?
I didn't know about it when it came out. I only knew about it when it hit the store, so. I bought it, and that was that.
Okay, so I've always had a grudge against this DVD release, which is why I wanted to do this discussion. Yeah. So, and Evil Seed did make the cut on the top five for season one, and then the season two is the one I had the biggest problem with, because I felt like the fans did not vote, at least at the time. Like, season one did pretty good. Season two, I was pissed off. I mean, I was mad that Dragon's Gift wasn't on there. Mm-hmm. I was mad that Disappearing Dragons wasn't on there. Shakoti, Prince Adam No More. I mean, just a whole slew of episodes. I feel like, how the hell did none of these make the cut? In season two, you got Problem with Power, which I got, but I just don't think it's that good. Origin of the Sorceress, it's okay. It's a great idea and a great story. It's just not executed very well. Into the Abyss, I think, is a terrible episode. It's got one great moment, and that is it. Tearless Triumph, I mean, it's not bad. And to save Skeletor, yes, that's a home run. But I think overall, it just felt like, God, there's so many other better episodes than what the fans picked. Like, they threw on Quest for He-Man for best of season one, you know, which had Plundor in it. And I lost my shit when it was announced, because I just felt like, our fans really think this is a great episode? They thought it was funny to put this on an official release, that when someone comes along and picks this up and says this was voted on by the fans, like, why the hell would they vote on that to be a great episode? Because it does start out really good, but it's just, you know, if you want to know our thoughts on it, we did it on our Easter special like 3 years ago that nobody watched, so it's still around. So you could check that out if you want to get our thoughts. But this is the reason I suggested we do this, because I just felt like there's so many other better episodes that should have made the cut on this. And I think we can all agree Evil Seed is unanimous with all three of us, because that's part of my top 10 as well. Because To Save Skeletor and Evil Seed are pretty much the two team-up episodes, but I kind of feel like To Save Skeletor is more of like a full-on team-up where both forces are standing side by side, taking on Shigor and Snake Mountain, and then going to Grayskull and duking it out. Whereas this one is just kind of to the bitter end, Skeletor is willing to raise his Havoc Staff at the same time. So it's a very, very brief team up. Yeah. Not the full on team up, but enough to where like it warrants it being like, this is the first time we've seen these guys stand side by side for a common cause. And it's done so well, like the dialogue between all of them, especially when Skeletor's hesitating to raise the Havoc Staff and He-Man's looking at him. You know, do it, otherwise everything's going to be destroyed. And Skeletor's just, he's still thinking about it. Like, I like just those little extra touches of giving depth. But like, Skeletor, this is against everything the man stands for. And at the end, like, He-Man says, we could do so much better working together. And Skeletor says, right here, buddy. You know, and just walks out. Like, I like that. Like, it's fun, because me and Joe said we'd always get excited about the idea of people changing sides. Mm-hmm. And it's fun to be teased with that. But you know what? That would make Skeletor a very credible villain if he was really tinker with the idea of becoming a good guy.
Yeah.
You know, he needs to give He-Man the finger, because we never wanted to see the Green Goblin team up with Spider-Man, and we don't want to see Joker team up with Batman. It does not work, and nor do I want to see that. At least not in a context where, like, hey, it's a brand new comic. He-Man and Skeletor, you know. Dynamic duo or something like that. But
yeah, Skeletor's turning over a new leaf now.
Yeah, no one would want to see that. But then that might be up in that latest multiverse bullshit that's coming out by DC Comics. But anyway, Evil Seed is a unanimous vote on this one. So, Kevin, throw out the next one.
All righty. Let's see. Because I got to remember the name. Sometimes my brain doesn't work. I might as well go with the easier one right now. House of Chakotay, part 1 and 2 for me. main reason being, creepy, had that cool vibe where, the archaeologist Malaktha and Stanlin were out there, and Stanlin was scared. It was always this thing of the Chakotay gargoyle or whatever outside was staring him down, and the eyes were twinkling, and he just, you know, that whole thing of, you know, is there something creepy here, you know, and they're, you know, trying to sleep in the tent, and they're just, hey, there's, you know, that, and that aspect of it was really cool. And again, another cool villain that wasn't in the actual figure line, and it, you know, was something made up of Filmation. And it was, again, a home run for me. And then Mosk, who had a cool look, and I just wish they could have done something with him or had him return or something, because he was such a cool design. There are so many things to like about those episodes. And goes back to when we were kids, but me and my sister would always laugh about Ram-Man mispronouncing Chakotay's name and, you know, all that stuff. There's so many great things in that episode. Her design is just so cool. And, you know, it's a home run for me. That's pretty much it for me.
You know, that's what makes things memorable is, oh, I'm sorry, Todd, I couldn't.
No. You go right ahead there, Joe. Go right ahead, bud. Okay.
All right. No, and again, that's on my list as well. I mean, it's the first time you haven't, you know, when you have a two-parter, it's different. you know, kind of like, wait, it's like we've said before, continuity is great, you know, and having little episodes like, you know, back in the past, you know, being like, you know, two-parter cool, unlike nowadays, everything has to connect. But when you get a little something like this once in a while, it definitely says, oh my God, what's going to happen the next episode? But I love the, you know, these episodes. It's like the ones that kind of like you've chosen and along with on my list, and I'm sure Tyler's going to have a multitude of stuff, but just knowing that these are different characters. You like tuning in to where, don't get me wrong, I love seeing the tried and true, seeing Stratos all the time, even though I hate them, and seeing Merman or seeing Triclops. There's the regulars, but then when there's the new characters, something about that really catches your eye, especially when you're a kid. And, you know, like you said, you had Mask, Malak, you know, Shakoti, when you finally see her and everything inside, you know, the temple, everything that's in there, it was frightening. And it definitely caught your attention. But you're right, something about a spooky atmosphere could really draw you in. And you're right, a beautiful design for her, but then you have these insane, ugly-looking Darkling things. Those things creep the hell out of me. It's the Sleeping Beast, you know, it's like Tyler said, the Sleeping Beast really didn't have that much of a moment. I still remember, damn, that's a big, scary thing, but it was taken care of quickly. But Shakoti was like, you know, she was the one that stole the show. It was just such a beautifully drawn, well-written character. And again, you're right, we never got a figure of her back then, but that episode, it really drew you in and held your attention.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tyler.
That was something too that Kevin had mentioned too, like the glowing eyes of the statue, or the face sculpt of her on the entrance, which is completely sealed up, which you stop and wonder, like, this is not really an actual door. It's sealed up, but it's got hieroglyphics or some sort of ancient text on the entrance, and then you got her head, almost as if, like, you know, and Stanley says, like, it's that this door is not as old as the rest of the pyramid. So it's, well, yeah, Malekta says that too, like, it was built to prevent people from coming in there. But I'm just curious, like, with the head sculpt is there, that was fashioned on there. You know, is Shakoti actually using that to, you know, deliberately scare the piss out of people? Or was it, I just kind of feel like it's meant as a safeguard, but it's used to actually bring, you know, Stanley, like, because that creeped the shit out of me when those tentacles come out of the head and grab, and he just evaporates into it.
Mm-hmm.
So it almost makes you feel like either her spirit has had all this time to pretty much make this safeguard pretty much obsolete. Like if they put something kind of like in a, you'll appreciate this, Kevin, in the Ghost Warrior episode, mm-hmm. where they had that pentangle on Groon the Destroyer's tomb. But once it's broken, his spirit is pretty much free to escape. But with this, I'm just curious, like, her spirit seems to have kind of broken through the barrier of this pyramid. So it's just one of those things, like, you start kind of thinking about it a little bit more, like, how does that work? Is there more to it? And I know if Larry DeTiller was here, God rest his soul, he'd say, I didn't think about it any further than that, guys. It was just something scary. But I will say, and Joe had, to touch on what Joe had said, most of the time, villains, if they weren't Skeletor, I didn't care about them as a kid. Like, to me, it was, and I only had the VHS tape, so if Skeletor wasn't in this episode, it was just like, eh, it's kind of filler episode. But with Azrog and Spydra, embraced the hell out of it and loved that, and with Shakoti and Mask, it scared the hell out of you. So it was, I think it was something special that to not have Skeletor or one of the Evil Wars as the main antagonist, a one-shot character that was in one episode resonated with all of us growing up, that when the series is pretty much in the dark ages, like unless you're still watching VHS tapes or whatever before internet, you remember these characters. Like, that says a lot, because I didn't know who Count Marza was. I had vague recollection of Negator because I thought he was lame as a kid. Now I think he's an amazing villain. Mm-hmm. But we all thought Mask and Shakoti were such memorable, scary villains. Like, it's unanimous. It shows you how powerful those two episodes, but one story, really were with all of us fans, that, you know, an episode didn't have to have Skeletor to be really good, but damn, boy, it was super memorable to have something that we all look at as like, that was creepy, not just something that he thought as a kid. To watch it now, I mean, I told Joe, I said, she always reminded me of the VHS covers of The Howling 2 and Fright Night 2, because it had the cover of an attractive woman with these big pouty lips, but with fangs.
Yeah.
And just the solid black eyes alone. And Linda Gary's laugh. Jesus, it was scary. I mean, it was so creepy. And it just kind of felt like nobody was safe. And to be to see a young kid running through these catacombs and chased by a giant rat and stuff. I mean, it just almost feels like we need to go back and do another commentary on that one. We did one with Danielle. We need to do one with Kevin. Come on and do commentary for House of Chakotay, because it's
oh, cool.
It's something that, you know, that's what makes this podcast so much fun. As many times as we can talk about just Mask and Chakotay, we can still come up with something else that we have not talked about before.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that's the magnitude of these characters. And yet these idiots in Hollywood and people writing comic books don't know jack shit because it's just never stop thinking about any of this stuff. So
I'll have a comment to say at the end, you know, because there's something I just realized within looking at my list and what we've been saying so far. It's like you said, I don't know if it's because you're so used to seeing the tried and true characters in your action figure form and in the comics that when we see something different in the cartoon, it really grabs your attention. But at the end, I'm going to have something to say, and it's going to pertain to the cartoon because it's something, God bless somebody. But did somebody sneeze?
No, I might have been drinking a water. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. I was like, God bless you. I was like, I don't know if anybody sneezed. But at the end, I'm going to make a point. And I just want to see if you'll see, both of you, see what I mean. But it'll be after we're done with all 10 of these, because I just looked at all my episodes, and it's like there's a trend that's in common. There's something that's in common with every one of these episodes. It's bizarre.
That they're all good?
Yeah, beyond all being good. But quickly, Tyler, was House of Chakotay on your list? Because if not, you'd have to go to your... Oh, okay. Now we're going to pass it back to Kevin. I still think we're definitely going to have some different picks, but we have two of them.
Here comes one. I guarantee you this one is going to be probably a fight. And I'll tell you why. Because I've got a couple on my list that aren't necessarily, let's say they weren't impactful or they're controversial or like, wow, I really hated, you know, there's probably some people that hated what they did with this character or that character. But it's just because I love this character and I don't really care. you know,
it's your favorites, man. It's your favorites. Go ahead. Yeah.
So one on my list is Mystery of Many Faces.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
And the reason being, I love Many Faces, but I wasn't quite in love with the writing on it. I didn't like the widgets or the...
What? You know,
yeah. see, there you go.
You got Tyler excited at first, and now he's pissed off. He's like, get off the show.
No, I mean, it's one of those things where it was... It has a good story for Many Faces, but it... A little bit more impact with it, but I just love the character, so I ended up loving the episode anyway for the most part. And you know, there's little things there. It just, the character of Many Faces is something that is like encompasses what Masters of the Universe pretty much is. It's a mishmash of crazy sci-fi ideas with fantasy, and Many Faces probably exemplifies that more than a lot of other characters, in that, you know, he's got like kind of this cool 50s sci-fi tubes and stuff all over him, and he's got a bucket head, and it shouldn't look cool in design in theory, but it looks cool. And, you know, there's great, you know, he's got the bracers and, you know, this little exoskeleton, and all of that stuff just comes together and makes it a fun character. You know, they do three different faces. And so a lot of things that were cool about that, they also, you know, the whole actor thing, and they introduced that in there. Well, it was in the mini comics too, I guess, was it? But you know, all these little things were really fun, and making Manny the villain at first, you know, also was a little bit in the mini comics and stuff, if I remember correctly. And so it was one of those things. I think for me personally, 2000X probably handled him better than Filmation for me.
Hogwash.
I was getting more and more upset. More.
Well, I'll go into more detail. As a kid, yes,
please,
I always
saw, be sure that you do.
As a kid, I always saw Manny as pretty much the second strongest character in the line. And when he was the monster. And I think there was some of that alluded to in the mini comics, maybe, I'm trying to remember all the pages and what's going on. But I always saw Manny as the second kind of strongest, and also the fact that the characters were a little bit more defined. They got a chance to play with the characters, the different faces, and the character of the faces, and the abilities of each of the faces. Like, you know, I always saw him as having different abilities for each face. So, 2000X did that better for me, you know, or at least you got to expand upon it more than maybe Filmation did, because he wasn't in very many episodes. I was
going to ask you what your take was on the Shadow Skeletor, which was his last and second appearance.
I honestly can't remember that one. I mean, is there so many episodes, and I can't remember. I need to go back and watch it.
I've got it here already, Joe. When we have Kevin back, we do commentary for Shadow of Skeletor.
Okay. All right.
Face the second appearance. Lock it in, dude, because we've got to make sure you revisit that. And it's on YouTube to watch, so.
Yeah, I'm sure I've seen it. It's just one of those things where it's trying to remember, because there's like 160-some episodes, right? Or of the
135 episodes.
135, okay. Yeah. And so, you know, but I know that for me, they handle him well. And don't get me wrong, it was a treat for me as a kid, because the only figures I had when I was a kid, because my folks were, well, it was a combination of the things. We didn't have a lot of money, and also the local store, which was a Ben Franklin, now it's like Arts and Crafts now, but it used to be like in the vein of like Target. It used to be that they would carry a bunch of different stuff, clothes, toys, blah, blah, blah. And they closed down in our local one, and it was harder for me to get to, like, when I was a kid, like the Charlottesville or something like that, where I lived. And so I only had Man-at-Arms, Skeletor, Manny, Ram Man, and one other figure, and I can't remember who it was. So Manny was always my favorite. It was just like straight out. I couldn't even get a He-Man, you know? So it was always, I would always see the ads and stuff and see, you know, just how cool He-Man looked in the ads. And I was like, God. And of course, my cousin who lives up the street, he had everybody and Castle Grayskull. So, you know, we'd play and stuff like that. So I'd be able to check that stuff out, but I really didn't have those characters. So when that Filmation episode came out, it was always a big deal for me. I had to watch it, you know. So there you go. That's my choice for my next one.
That's an excellent choice, because I really, really like that episode a lot. Awesome. I like the emotional arc that Manny goes through that episode, which, mm-hmm. yeah, I felt like 2000X did have the luxury of using these guys a lot more than when Filmation had them. It was pretty much one guy per episode, whereas you got a whole bunch at once. But Paul Dini did such a great job of making him, well, a mysterious character. Like, I liked knowing, you know, because I didn't have the mini comic as a kid. So this episode is kind of what I went by, that you didn't know how he got his powers. You didn't know how he got those three alternate personalities. And I kind of like that. Even though the mini comic does a great job, and I like that, and I wouldn't argue that if that was made canon. But I like the idea that it's just abilities that he came across. He doesn't know how he got them, or if he does, we're not told. And I think it's important that we don't really know, but that he just becomes an outsider and takes what he wants. And seeing that moment when Skeletor traps him, when he refused to fight, and he just starts to cry, like, it's just a second of animation, but God, is it impactful, because that resonated with me as a kid. You felt really, really bad for him. Mm-hmm. You know, to see him clashing with He-Man and the Widget's Fortress, and then forced to work with Skeletor, and then he redeems himself at the end. And Lou Scheimer does such a great job voicing him, which if I felt Filmation did, or that 2008 did something better, I'll admit it, but I felt that Filmation Manny Faces, like, I loved his voice, and I just loved his growling, like when he becomes the monster.
Yeah,
he growls a lot, and then he's got that Lou Scheimer kind of, you know, calm voice when he's just the kind of humanoid form. And Joe, take off, because I'll keep talking about Mystery Man. That's another one. It's an amazing episode, highly, highly underrated, I think.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, my third pick is Dawn of Dragoon.
Yeah,
another great one. I mean, this is where we get the introduction of Driel, and Well, she appears after like this little accident that Orko did in the lab, and the pyramid disappears, reappears. Boom! Here's Driel talking about some danger and something that's happening on Tralla. And so Orko goes with her. And at first, just the thought of a different type of Tralland was kind of cool. Again, something that's eye-catching. They go there, and of course, then He-Man and Battle Cat, you know, they're at Castle Grayskull. The sorceress opens a portal to boom, send them to Tralla. And when they go through, bam, now you have Adam and Cringer. And when they encounter that, like, snake type of creature, whatever the hell it was called, out, did it have an actual name, Tyler, or is it just...
It's not name checked at all, and I don't even know if I'm sure it's probably, if I look in the book, it's probably given like a random name, because most of the creatures were given something, we just don't hear it. So I'm sure it does, but I don't know what it is.
Okay, well here's this random creature, but some of the things you see is like different, like when Adam tries to use his fire blaster, but it then turns to water on that thing, and you know, he tries to use this, you know, cleverness to have that thing tie itself up. But the part when he tries to transform and when he says, by the power of Grayskull, you knew it even as a kid, something was off. Because when he said it, it was not in that powerful, manly, echoing He-Man voice. It was in Adam's voice. You knew it from the get-go, and he couldn't transform. So later when he has to, you know, when Cringer talks to Adam and he realizes, that's it. Maybe if I say, by the power of Grayskull backwards, I'll transform. It just, I like that. I like things that were just different from the norm. So He has this transformation, becomes He-Man, and Then you find out, like, with Dragoon. I mean, Dragoon is trying to take and sap all the magic from all the Trollins, and he's going to give it to his master, Skeletor, which I thought was, wait, that's weird. He's working for Skeletor, but he's on another planet. I always thought that was weird, like, that Skeletor had this connection with somebody on Tralla. Like, okay, wait, was Dragoon originally on Eternia? But then through some, like, you know, maybe he had dealings with Skeletor before, and there was a way they opened a portal to send him to Tralla, or was he always on Tralla? That part used to, as a kid, fascinate me, because I didn't know how that connection happened. But seeing the encounter that He-Man had with Dragoon, you know, when he has that big rock with all the vines and throws it, but boom, Dragoon's caught, and he goes down to the, like, that bottomless chasm, whatever the hell it was called. I don't know if it was a... Again, I don't know if that was
the name called. The bottomless hole of Tralla.
All right. Okay. Yeah, so he's going down that, but then He-Man, of course, risks his life to go down there and save and pull him up. And, you know, he's considering He-Man his enemy. And he was like, you know, I may be your enemy, but you're not mine. I liked moments like that, to where, you know, this guy who is evil maybe did see the error of his ways. Unlike Skeletor, which, like we said, yes, I always like the team-ups with sometimes the heroes and the villains together and thinking it was cool. But in no way did I ever want Skeletor to be permanently a good guy. Because like you said, okay, he was the main bad guy. I don't want that. But these kind of one-off characters and these special moments, you know, it kind of could connect with you. It meant something. Even to see about the showing of faces from, you know, Driel to Orko. You know, that's when somebody you love to show your face. And just with the shadow part of it was kind of weird. And it just had a lot of moments. That's, like you said, these top tens, they might all have a different meaning for each one of us. But I know that was memorable to me. And, the Dawn of Dragoon, that's in my top ten.
That really should have been on this disc, period, because that it gives you so much in that episode that has just become, you know, lore. And to me, it's got one of the best transformation sequences of the entire series, even 2000X, when Adam says to say it backwards because of the stakes that are going on. Like, I get goosebumps every time I hear that particular one. I listen to it when I work out also. Like, listen to that. Having that transformation blast in my ear, I could pick up anything in the gym when I listen to that, because it's just so impactful. I love it so much. And Orko's clapping, saying it worked. I'm like, ready to go kick some ass, man. Mm-hmm. And that alligator / lion creature, which I thought was quite fascinating as a kid too. But Dragoon himself, and I remember reading this like on James's blog, that Dragoon was supposed to show up, I thought, in some of the earlier episodes, even possibly in, do I dare say, Diamond Ray Disappearance, but there was a connection, I think.
Oh, so he would have been he would have been from Eternia then, huh?
I remember seeing that somewhere, but we had Robbie London on. He had no recollection of it, but, you know, unfortunately, Robbie couldn't remember everything that he did back then. But
okay.
But and that's probably one of the best lines too in that episode. Is, I may be your enemy, but you're not mine. Like that's worthy of an Emmy, an Oscar. I mean, everything. It's such a memorable piece of dialogue that, oh my God, I just want to beat the shit out of people who want to slam He-Man and and the Filmation series, like you see stuff like that, and like, damn it, man, you don't get that kind of quality in a children's cartoon, mm-hmm. and you haven't for years, and you know, and that statement didn't resonate with me as much as it does as an adult. Like that, that's it's not like I watched Dawn of Dragoon. There's I have nostalgia feelings for it, but I've also got adult feelings about that because I found the fight to be more impactful as an adult. And He-Man's, you know, logic behind that. It just, there's so many more meanings to it. You watch this stuff as an adult, you get things that, you know, as a kid, you know, you're just there for the action, the cool visuals. But it's a testament to how well these shows were written. You know, we're, here we are still talking about. I mean, and I made my list, like, based on, because I think we've all got our reasons for the episodes we chose. Mine came from, you know, because I didn't put, like, Return of Orko's Uncle in this one. That's a personal favorite of mine. Mm-hmm. But my list, like, this would be like, okay, look, if you think it's a silly-ass cartoon from the 80s, watch these episodes. Like, this mm-hmm. is why. And you guys are picking and good ones, too. They've got so many great moments in them, too, that, like, they would be on that list, too. Because it's just, it's a testament to how good the show was. And that's why I take offense to this. I get really pissed off if people want to shit on this property. I don't take it lightly, especially when people want to shit on the 87 movie, Kevin.
Hey, all I can tell you, man, is that I can understand why you like it. I just, I for some reason, even as a kid, I just couldn't. When I saw the 87 movie, I'd watch it and go, what the hell is that? What the hell is that? What's that? You know? And, it's not to say that you shouldn't like it. I'm just saying I had far more in common, like, what was it? The Toys That Made Us. And I had more in common with Eric Treadaway with what he said. And it was pretty much kind of my feelings about it, you know. And like, what bothered me so much was, is even in its moments, I'm sorry, I'm just going off on a tangent here. But even in its easiest moments with Man at Arms, the costume, whereas everybody else just was not on point, the costume was on point. All they had to do was give him drab green and a copper color to his armor, and he would have been almost, you know, toy accurate. And I just sat there going, what? You know, and it just, it hurts me sometimes because I'm sitting there going, the most easiest common sense decisions went out the door, you know, and you know, that's for what it's worth. If Tyler, if it helps you understand.
And you're hurting me with these things you're saying here. I
mean, that's it, Kevin. You're cut off. Tyler's not gonna, no more commissions. Yeah. You're done.
Yeah, I expect my Liz commission to be done by tonight. Have it FedEx to my house.
I'll be eating shoe tonight for dinner.
Yeah. But yeah, I just had to throw it in there. But my episode, the next one I'm going to put on this list is Betrayal of Stratos, which is a season two episode. I almost had made my list pretty much season one because season one was superior. But there are some really, really good season two episodes. And that one is one where people don't talk about Betrayal of Stratos at all. Like, I had to talk Joe into doing commentary for it, like, for many, many months. So it was just, like, ducking me. It was like a guy trying to avoid a loan shark. And like, I'll get it to you next week.
You know? It's like he mentions the name Stratos, and then my mind just shuts off, like,
God. But it wasn't because, you know, because I like Stratos. But I mean, as a kid, it was because Whiplash was in it. That was the first time I actually saw Whiplash in the cartoon. But to watch it as an adult, I like Stratus' story. I like Hawk being the traitor to the bird people of Avion, and He-Man pretty much dropping everything to stop and help Stratus clear his name, breaking into the demon zone, and this character named Crawl, which I want to see Kevin draw someday. Cool. Which I just thought, like, this demon, which looks like the devil, that runs this place called the Demon Zone, and Whiplash is the kind of guardian of it when he's not working for Skeletor, and seeing that sequence of Whiplash on his knees, kind of kneeling at this fire blazing, and Crawl's face comes to it and talks to him, and God, it was just so demonic, and like, this is what evil should look like in Master of the Universe. Like, it was so memorable to me as a kid. Like, another one-shot villain we don't see him do anything. He's just a face. But I like to think that he is, you know, we've seen kind of like the devil almost, like in a stone, Wizard of Stone Mountain, like the spirit of evil. Mm-hmm. But it's, I mean, I'm sure this universe has got multiple devils in it. But it was, I thought it was a great redemption story too for Hawk, for He-Man to push the fact that, yes, she's betrayed you guys, but everyone deserves a second chance. Like, I just like how He-Man is very wise. It doesn't come off as preachy when it comes to the morals of the stories. A really good moral should be woven into it and becomes part of the story, not something that, you know, is slapping you across the head like you were talking down to you. And that's what I loved about it was He-Man's, what's the word? But He-Man just kind of reminding Stratos that, look, this is a terrible thing that happened to you, but give her a second chance. She's helped save the egg. But I like how they say it, but she'll be strength of all rank and placed on punishment detail until she can earn your trust. Like that was a brief line of dialogue that wraps up the story, but lets you know she's not just going to be walking amongst everybody. Like, it's a great redemption story. It's such a great underrated story. I really do. And I love the Kerak, which is the mother road used from Valley of Power, but she'll always be like the Kerak to me. So maybe one day I get Kevin to draw a Crawl King of Demons for me in some sort of collage picture of evil or something like that. So
that's a good choice. Another thing that there's a theme in common, and I see with what you did. Like I said, we'll have something to say to what a lot of other people say about the cartoon, and you'll see what I mean at the end. But all right, Kevin, what's your fourth?
All righty. My fourth one is Secret of Grayskull.
Wow, I was not expecting that one.
I'll tell you why. Well, the easiest answer for that one is Sorceress. I think she's hands down one of the coolest damn female designs for any character, whether it's Marvel, DC, whatever. Her design to me is really awesome. Her character was really cool. I mean, and the reason I like Secret of Grayskull is it, while it's focusing on Orko, and, you know, I can take it or leave Orko depending on the episode. Well, I mean, sometimes he's good, and sometimes, you know, he can be a little annoying.
All right.
But while the focus was Orko, you know, actually what happens is it shows you more about the Sorceress and how she holds everything together than whether or not they were trying to, you know, pep up Orko's ego, you know, because, you know, he had given up and was wanting to call it.
Well, it seems to happen in quite a few episodes, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was more about finally getting a chance to see the Sorceress protect Grayskull and protect, you know, and do something that was, you may, you know, a little bit more physical or at least fighting. I mean, she kicked Skeletor's ass in the episode. So, you know, it was kind of one of those things where you finally got to see what she was capable of. And that was a fun episode. Certain episodes might be just specifically for characters, and I might like it just for the characters. And this was one of those episodes. It was, you know, it had a lot of the things you come to expect from the series, and you're like, okay, I've seen another Orko episode or whatever, but this one, it definitely focused more on the Sorceress, even though it was supposed to be about Orko. It kind of led you around about the Sorceress and letting her have a chance to shine, especially the whole thing with fighting Skeletor when she, you know, lowered the drawbridge and, you know, and then they were in Castle Grayskull and, you know, do a little magic battle and stuff. So I thought that was awesome. That's why I like that one.
Interesting choice. Because what always stood up for me is that Clawful, Cobra Khan, and Trapjaw are used in that. And when I first saw that, like, oh man, Clawful and Cobra Khan in the same episode. But I hated Clawful's voice. Oh my God, in that episode. Yeah. It was so, like, I don't know what it was. Luke had never seemed to replicate Clawful's voice that well in a lot of episodes. But seeing that shot of Skeletor and the three of them together, I love that image. Love it, love it, love it.
So. All right. My fourth. This is one that I doubt either of you would even care about, maybe not even most fans, but I love the episode of Battle Cat. I'm not one that's usually for tons of origin stories, but there was something kind of interesting about seeing the origin of Battle Cat, how it all started, but also seeing when Adam's young, when Tila's young, and, you know, like, because Tyler loves getting on how Tila's always saying, man, she's always so bitchy and mean to Prince Adam. And just to see that she was even like that when they were kids, I was like, damn, you're, I mean, she is like, you are rotten along with those other kids teasing, you know, cringer. It's like, oh, man, I wish you'd go up there and just punch one of those little punks. It used to drive me nuts. But to know that, seeing even the Sorceress, that's what I guess got me is, Sorceress always had that connection, even he, you know, when he was a kid. Like, did he know of his destiny even then? Or just for whatever reason, she always had those psychic messages with him and to let him know that, you know, there's going to be something important about Cringer. You know, he's going to be very important to him someday. And then you fast forward to, you know, years later when, you know, he's becoming He-Man and always doing that out of the sight of Cringer. But then one day Cringer shows up and, you know, he's shocked. And when he points the sword, boom, it turned him into Battle Cat. And when Battle Cat made his first appearance, you know, and you see like Man at Arms or Teal, like looking up like, what is that? You know, I just thought it was fascinating. Just see, you know, his origin and like his first appearance. It, again, for a kid was memorable and still memorable, you know, memorable to me now. But I liked it. If any origin I thought was kind of cool, it was the one for Cringer / Battle Cat. I liked it. Could you just imagine He-Man, you know, the most powerful man in the universe. You're always seeing him at times, but now he shows up on something else that you have no clue what this thing is. And, you know, he didn't even know his name, but I liked it when the sources mentioned Battle Cat. And then, okay, now he knows Battle Cat, but I liked it. I like seeing him show up, but also just to, you know, see how Tila always was rotten to Adam. It was like she's always been like that, but it was a nice bond for him, you know, with Adam and Cringer.
Cool.
I always thought that was just kind of an okay episode. It's been a long time since I've watched it, but I like that idea and seeing that more of a backstory for Cringer. I guess I just, a lot of these episodes have got really, really good ideas. They're just not, like, the final outcome of the episode is like Origin of the Sorceress, I'm not going to, but it's on this list, and like Stridor's in it, which I love it for that, but I just don't think it's as good as it could have been. You know,
I think for me, it's like you said, the ending, maybe not as much, but
well, yeah, because the villain, Morgrath, I thought, I can never remember his name because it was such a lackluster, forgettable villain. But I enjoyed seeing the nods to the evil horde, the fact that there have been multiple sorceresses. That I'm all right with. It's multiple He-Mans I got a real problem with.
I don't like it. We won't speak of it.
So I can't wait till that comic comes out, because when I go, I'll go to the nearest comic store and just shit on every copy. I just felt like it's a good idea, just didn't deliver the punch that it should have. So that's why I was like, it just doesn't deserve to be in the top 10. But the story it's a great idea, just not executed that well. But I maybe like, because I've come around to it a little bit more, but it's still like an okay episode to me. So Battle Cat's something I would need to go back and revisit, because I just always kind of found it to be like kind of like an okay episode overall.
I just think it's, like I said, it was the moments of certain things, especially when he does show up with Battle Cat, and for them, you know, not having a clue who the hell, it was pretty cool. Yeah. So yeah, that was my fourth pick.
Cool.
Kevin, right, so, number five, dude.
Number five? Okay. Let's see. Well, I'll say as far as the numbers go, since we're on number five, Tyler's already went over it already, but the Origin of the Sorceress is on there. And that's mainly being because it's the Sorceress. And and so, yeah, the problems that you stated with it, I mean, those were some of the things. Yeah, it was begrudgingly. Honestly, it was between this and Temple of the Sun with Neptune.
Oh, man.
I know. Well, the reason being is that you rarely. I like those one-off villain characters that could give He-Man a challenge. You know,
but he doesn't do anything though.
Yeah,
he doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. It was a tie. It was a choice between Origin of Sorceress or.
Oh my God, Kevin! You should have me let me look at your list first. I could have helped you.
He would have graded you like you were in school or something. He would have gave you like maybe a C minus for your master's grade.
I said, "Look, you got some good. I'm not going to give you a final grade till you go back and fix this."
That's why we have Origin of Sorceress on my list.
Wow.
So I guess I'll skip over that, but because we've already talked about it, you know. So what do you want to go on? Joe, you want to go on for your...
Oh, yeah, I'll go to my next one. This one is... Tyler already knows it's going to be on my list. It's not going to be on his, but it is a good episode. It is To Save Skeletor. When, again, yeah, I liked how it began. You know, when Whiplash... I mean, when you see a main villain coming into the Royal Palace, especially almost from the get-go in the start, when this happens, it's like, you know, what in the hell is going on? And then when Whiplash is talking about this threat and this creature and the Shigora, and again, he seemed... So I remember some people would always say, oh, that thing just looks just silly. It looks like a big blob. I was like, but really look at it. I mean, does it really look that silly? And when, especially when he's getting pissed and he has that angry face, but it's like, this is something that, you know, it's going to take all the good guys and, again, bad guys. Again, for me, sometimes these team-up moments seem like they were memorable. And, again, a memorable villain, something that is literally almost unstoppable, especially seeing when the Sorceress is using her last, you know, this is one last chance to use all her power. And then he got pissed because when he was first getting hit, you know, it's like he's laughing at her. It's like, oh my God, this is a Sorceress. This is Castle Grayskull. She's doing nothing to him. And even with the full force, it still didn't do anything but really piss him off. Like maybe that was maybe like he got pinched or poked, you know, like, okay, I felt a little bit of that. Now you done fucked up. So, I just remember it was just so memorable again. And the freakiness of seeing the Sorceress turning into a harpy, there was just a lot of stuff going on in the episode. But just, again, showing teamwork and that even Orko Boone doing what he has to do, that little shot, and then Shigora gets, you know, sent back into, you know, his world. Because it was scary. I used to have this, like, fear, this weird thing about giant space or falling, and the thought of, oh my God, are they going to get sucked into that thing? I mean, everything, this is scary looking. So just seeing how it was stopped and defeated. But, yeah, To Save Skeletor was, it was something different. So that's my fifth pick.
Or in my I've got seven left here. Did we screw up or something like that? Or
because I think it's because we might have doubled up on one. I don't know. But go ahead, do your fourth and fifth.
House of Chakotay. I think at least for me, I'm counting as two.
I was counting as one episode with that one. At least on my list, because I've got seven more listed here. But
you go four or five then. Go ahead.
Next was Disappearing Dragons.
Okay.
It's a personal favorite, but it's also like one that I come to really appreciate the writing in it, and that an episode when you're bringing in, you know, new characters, you kind of felt like this could be done pretty badly, like to showcase new characters that are toys, but they're thrown in such a beautifully told story by Larry DiTilio about animal abuse, cockfighting, using dragons and stuff. And I mentioned it before, but I was bothered as a kid, even though I adored this episode. God, I loved it so much. Did not see Webstor and Cobra Khan working directly with Skeletor. Bothered me a bit as a kid because I wanted to see them three together, like in the same space, throne room, whatever. But as an adult, I appreciate so much more of these evil wars on their own and trying to come up with their own skin to take over Eternia, and that they're selling dragons to the Dharmi for cockfighting for the means to conquer Eternia. Like that's a pretty ballsy story. And then to bring in Buzz Off and Whiplash and Buzz Off and Mechaneck and set them up as a tag team that to this day I would love to see like a comic book done of just those two. And Kevin can illustrate it. I'll write it.
All right.
And I just like that dynamic of these two tag teams having, you feel like they've kind of fought each other already. I just love that setup. And a Grandemir coming back in this episode, which was, it felt like this episode couldn't have gotten any better to have Grandemir, Mechaneck, Buzz Off, Webstor, and Cobra Khan in it, and this great fight with He-Man and Bellatron. It's such a memorable episode. So that is a personal favorite, but I feel like it transcends my own desires, and like this is something I would recommend to someone new to the series. Like I just think because it's such a, it's balls big enough to come in a dump truck. Yeah.
See, Tyler's picks are I noticing that his are kind of more of a, you come at it sort of like a, if I was going to introduce this series to somebody, this is what I do. And I noticed that I'm leaning more towards, hey, I just love these characters, so I'm being really selfish.
Well, but I thought about doing that, but I really felt like this is what bothered me about this set, is that I feel like this was not the best collection of episodes, especially if someone walks into the local Walmart and sees this. I'm like, it's not a very good selection of 10 episodes here. Yeah. So I just kind of feel like that was the reason I wanted to do this, but I didn't tell Joe that initially, that I'm going to pick a list based on to sell someone. So that's why everyone would kind of have their own reason for like the top 10.
Yeah.
You know what's funny is so far what we've picked, you know, between our top 10s and we got more to come, nothing seems corny about any of these episodes, because you know that's all you have from anybody that's, you know, says they watch the original cartoon. Oh, it's just corny, it's cheesy, stupid, and silly. Everyone I think we've said so far has none of those factors, so maybe they would go back, rewatch, and think, okay, damn, I guess this wasn't corny. It's you get thoughts in your head. Maybe there was a moment thought, oh, it was cheesy, and as you grew up you just continue to think that. But if you go back and look at it, like, damn, that actually was good. Oh, that was a good story. Those were unique characters. Mm-hmm. You know, what powers moments? That's what it's about. That's why we're doing it. That's why, okay, you did your fourth, but you go ahead and do your fifth now, Tyler, since you got to double up.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, next would be The Sleepers Awaken. Which, as a kid, another episode, no Skeletor. It was only one episode on a VHS tape, which was kind of disappointing, but God, it was a memorable episode to me as a kid. I thought Tyrann was a great looking villain, kind of zombified almost, and Lady Valtyra was hot. I was like, I want He-Man to get with her, like hell with Tila. It's like I want them two to run off together, and it's just such a Douglas Booth did such a great job writing this story of jealousy, and that it doesn't come off as childlike. The story, like, that was what was so good about the show, is like, yeah, you had a couple of turds here and there that were written so poorly, but this was an episode that I feel like it was written very maturely. You know, it's a small cast of four characters throughout the entire episode, and just seeing these people, you know, these two vain people make the changes over this episode don't feel necessarily forced. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite moments too is when he's renounced, you know, or not quite yet, but when he pretty much tears the castle down, they run out and they realize Sago's still in there, and Tyrann goes after him. And I love the music that's playing, and he's struggling, he can't move it. And then Hema says, let me give you a hand. And just, they work together briefly. Sago comes out and he's like, I got one last rescue I want to make, and runs back into the castle to get the giant snake. Great character traits of He-Man. Like, son of a bitch, man. This is why I love He-Man so much. It's moments like that. You know, it just means
saving
more
all
to
creatures.
Me.
You're right.
Yeah, like, but I'm an animal lover, but I as a kid, I just took it for granted. Like, that's what heroes do. That's what you expect to do. But it's more impactful to me to watch that as an adult. With the back and forth where Tyrann thinks that Lady Valtyra's forgotten about him. She's pining over this younger guy. I'm going to get her. She's going to pay for this. Like, it's a very plausible love story. Like, it doesn't feel like this is so unrealistic and silly here.
Yeah. They knew what they were doing. You're right. They knew it, like, ahead of time. You know, like you said, when that big creature was, you know, wrapped up in the thing and when he was wrapped in. And you would think that in most cartoons that would be, like, a disposable character moment. Like, okay, He-Man did that. And, oh, now, you know, let's just walk away. And it crushes and kills. And you might think, hey, there was a creature left in there. They knew what they were doing. For him to go back and, like you said, to save something that you'd almost think was an afterthought, again, it shows the character of He-Man. And you're right. That was a great episode.
Yeah. It gives me chills just thinking about it. God, it's such a great episode. And I know Kevin likes it because he's mentioned them to me in conversation. So I like it. It's a beautiful episode.
They deserve a two-pack. They deserve a two-pack.
They really do. They really do.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. What do we do when we have the same things on the same list? Because that is actually on my list. So
all right.
Well, then transition to number six. We might double up. Just go to your sixth pick, and you might run out quicker. So might I.
All righty. Well, I tell you what. I'm going to go with, let me see here. Because I didn't think I could. I didn't know whether or not to count House of Chakotay as one or two, so I counted it as two of my picks.
That's fine.
Let's see. And you already got Sleepers. All right. I'll go with Evelyn's plot.
You're the only other person who's ever mentioned that episode, man.
Well, no and I, I'll tell you why. And it did. I need to go back.
That didn't make the top 10.
I need to watch it again because it's been a while. But the reason I liked it, and I liked it ever since I was a kid, was the whole thing with the cordite chess piece, the breastplate, and seeing Skeletor be on the same level as He-Man.
Yeah.
That was just so much fun. It was like about time, you know, because there was this whole thread that was in the original of the vintage figures and in some of the comics, and they just kind of dropped it, was the two halves of the power sword.
Yeah.
And so I always thought it was cool because it was like, which one's going to win? You know, both of them were kind of on level playing field with that kind of idea. And you never saw, at least not to my knowledge, you never saw anything with the mini comics or anything that actually explored resolving that. It just kind of one minute, you know, there that was a plot point in the toys. You know, they actually had the two halves, and then you had the mini comics, and then the next minute, the mini, you know, He-Man's got the sword, and you know, everything is kind of Filmation status quo. So with this one, it was kind of fun bringing it back to that where Skeletor was on He-Man's level for a little bit. And so that was my favorite aspect of that episode. And so
didn't like the widgets. How about the widgets? You still hate them in this episode? Or? You got to like them sometime, Kevin. Damn it.
Oh, bad. I know it adds richness to the whole, you know, Eternia, you know, as far as its peoples, whatnot. But I just, the widgets are hard sell for me. That's all I'm saying.
Well, hey, you got to look at least, if anything, that's what's great about this. It's, you know, it is Evil Lynn's plot, and it shows how she had an idea, and her idea worked. You know, yeah, she actually, exactly. It was the comps, you know, yeah, to become, you know, Nadira and the whole little thing with Panthor. But then, you know, to kind of like using her beauty and everything to get squinched, hey, maybe look at that cordite. And it was, for me, frightening. It almost felt Disney-like how to see when she laughed and turned from Nadira into Evil Lynn. Just, oh, God, did that scare me.
I thought
it
was creepy as a kid.
It was like, oh shit, it was scary, creepy, and just beautifully animated. But yeah, you're right. That's on my list too. That was going to be my sixth that I picked, but it had a lot of great moments.
God bless you both here, man, because I really felt like, you know, if I don't carry a flag for this episode, no one's going to be talking about it. Like, I know James is a fan of the episode, but it's not never really talked about. So
I can't believe nobody talks about this episode. This is one that just dumbfounds me. But yeah, I'll pass to you, Tyler.
It's on mine too, because to me, it's the quintessential He-Man versus Skeletor episode. Like, if you want to see these an episode about these two fighting, like, this is the one you show someone new to the series. Like, even though they fight in a lot of episodes, a one-on-one fight like that just doesn't happen that much throughout the series. So they're actually making, you know, physical contact, fighting each other. It's not a sword fight. I still love to see a great sword fight with them, which we got pieces of that MYP, but fight inside a volcano cave.
Yeah.
You can't get more epic than that. And that shot of Skeletor holding the cord over the fire, mm-hmm. and the flames are up in his face. God, it's such great imagery. Just, and when He-Man says, that's a pretty big bow, Skeletor, and you see Evil Lynn go, oh, shit. Yeah. Like, that look on her face, like, that was a nice touch by the animus to let it know, like, oh, my God, like, you know, just that emphasizing how much of a badass He-Man is from her perspective. So, yeah. I mean, but we've talked about that to death, and I think it's just great that you guys have that on the list, because that was fighting for number one on my list.
That's awesome. So. I'm glad we all picked that one again, too, because, it's damn well worth it. We should have our own top 10 released on DVD.
See, that's what I'm saying. This thing is bullshit.
It's like, it's rigged. You know? It's rigged. So Kevin.
Joe could go back through and scan this and put our episodes on this and make. Hey, check out this new top 10 episode, you know, by Fans of Power, you know. Buy this, you know. Dump that other piece of shit.
So, Kevin, number seven, since we all had Evil Lynn for at least go ahead.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm kind of running out of choices now, because a couple of them, like Origin of Sorceress and or something else. So, I'm sort of running out. I'll pick another one. This one is mainly because I like the character, and it's not really. It kind of hits you over the head a little bit with a message, but you know, at the same time, it's not a bad message to hit you over the head with. So I'm not going to complain. But the Great Books of Mystery with Batros.
Oh yeah,
I love Batrus's design. It's another one of those guilty pleasures where it's just like he's so damn cool that, you know, I want to draw him. I think he's cool. I want to know more about him. I wish they had done more episodes with him. You know, there were so many little things about that character. And when I got that figure, I was just like, holy crap, it's so on point to the cartoon. And I was just like, it doesn't get any better than that. So Batrus, you know, the whole, I enjoyed the whole, you know, books being power kind of thing. And even Skeletor had to admit that, you know, I think Beastman or somebody says something, or was it Trapjaw? Says something along the what the hell do you need books for or whatever?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Skeletor's like, you know, just like, fool, that's where all the power is, you moron. And so it kind of clubbed you with the whole reading and book thing over the head a little bit, but it was good. It was a good message to have. So that's why I like that episode.
It's a good episode. Like it does run borderline with the moral of like telling kids to read, but I think having Skeletor make a valid point that knowledge is power and that you get knowledge from books.
Yeah.
I think that it gives it a lot of credibility as a child watching that. And you're like, you know, okay, I get that. It doesn't come off like he's got the English. Hey, read books, kids. You know, you learn a lot. Like, I don't want to be told that. So, excellent choice, dude.
Hey, thanks, man. It was always a guess because I remember more episodes than I know the titles and stuff sometimes. But, I just, right across the board, Batrus just made that whole thing for me. You know, I was just like, here's another Filmation character, another character that isn't in the toy line, and I want to know who the hell this guy is, and I want to know more about him. And when you're able to do that, that's something, you know? So, there you go.
All right. You know, I honestly don't remember the top 10 list that, you know, was released. So, I mean, I know Tyler knows it offhand. I'm not sure if the Dragon's Gift made it, but the Dragon's Gift.
Are you kidding me? That was probably the biggest crime of all. That was.
Oh, it wasn't on?
No.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, the Dragon's Gift. It's like, who wouldn't like that? I mean, the introduction of this character.
Well, apparently, a lot of the people who bought on this damn DVD did not think it was worthy enough to be on here.
That's again another shocker. That's why I'm hoping every time I say something, I want to hear what Tyler, you know, says. Nope, that wasn't on. But I mean, everybody that it seems like when we go into the He-Man community, any of these pages, you mentioned Grandemere, and everybody knows him. It seems like everybody knows and loves this character. It's like that's why it shocked me that now what you said that it wouldn't even make it on there. But yeah, you know, when you're seeing you know, Man at Arms put into a state to where, oh my God, is he going to die? What's going to have to be done? And He-Man has to find out what he has to do. And you go to Grandemere, Grandemere gives him this choice about you have to chop down the oldest, tree, you know, Sky Tree, you know, because Sky Tree is older than Grandemere. And the moment when He-Man goes to chop down Sky Tree, and then you see this Treeprecon, and Treeprecon is just crying too, but He-Man realizes, I can't do this. You know, I can't take a life because, you know, Sky Tree is a life. He's alive, he's speaking and everything. And so, you know, because Grandemere had his test, and He-Man kind of, you know, of course, He-Man passed that test, so then he's able, Grandemere is going to heal Man-at-Arms. But I like the compassion. It shows what, you know, He-Man's character is, even if it's the risk of, oh, my God, you know, if I don't chop down Sky Tree and I go back and he doesn't help, you know, Man-at-Arms could be dead. It's weird. It's like a life for a life, but He-Man couldn't do it, you know? It shows his character. It's a special, it's a powerful episode. Along with, like we said, the characters that are unique that really are eye-catching that you know, of course, we start getting more of Grandemere later on, but it's one that kind of like can hit you right here, you know, in a lot of different ways, right in the heart.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. And it did when I started renting that a lot in high school. I think it was 11th grade, and I that last bit, like, as a kid, I thought it was just a great, memorable episode that Skeletor was barely in it, and Grandemere was the memorable part, but watching that as a young adult, like that sequence of dialogue when He-Man's like addressing it and then confronts Grandemere on it, he just says, where's my gift? And we don't have it. And he's just pretty much like, you can kill us if you want, you know, but, you know, we're not going to take a life to save it. And you see that shot of Grandemere like snarling, like he's being denied, almost like he doesn't know how to respond. Like, I can't believe like these assholes walking in my home and don't give me what I want. But it's, I hate to tell you, God, I would have loved to have asked that guy a million questions about just this episode alone. It is by far the best He-Man episode that's ever been done, period. Mm-hmm. Before, I mean, ever since to today, it's worthy of a movie if they actually had a brain that could put together a He-Man movie. Just man. Well, thank you.
Whistling at you. Hey, the bird thinks you're hot somehow.
That's the bird. The bird. Sorry.
But I feel like I've always felt the Dragon's Gift was worthy of like of a standalone film. Like if you were have like a trilogy of He-Man films, like I felt like the Dragon's Gift could be like the middle film or in the series of film, because just having the story of introducing Grandmare, this race against time to save Man at Arms, and He-Man having to accept the fate that I'm not going to take a life to save another life. Like that's worthy of being on a movie, like with the epic score and I just love, you know, the Sky Tree character himself too. Like I feel like that's a character that has a lot of history just by showing him there. And Grandmare is probably the best original character from Filmation. Like I dare even say, even the Orko and the Sorceress were pretty much Filmation made, but God, Grandmare is somebody that I think not a single person could. And I'm sure there's somebody out there that says, I think he's underrated or overrated or something like that. But God, it's just such a great episode. It's a masterpiece of an episode. And
was it in your top 10 or no?
No.
Okay.
You believe that?
It's a joke? Masterpiece. He's like,
I'm raving about it. I'm like, all right, what? Didn't even make my top 10 joke. Yes, it was my number one.
Oh, it was? Okay. Yeah, because, all right. I was just making sure. I was like, man, if he sat there and he's saying all this good stuff and he ain't in his top 10, it's going to shock me. So
yes, I would be quite the hypocritical, you know, asshole, because, like I said, that was the biggest crime about this DVD was that Dragon's Gift was not on this. Above everything else, I probably could have forgiven it, but Dragon's Gift was not on this. Instead, they picked that piece of shit quest for He-Man, so...
You really
if I find out who you are, I'm gonna smash your head clean out of your ass with a stern talking to. That's what I'm going to do.
All right. Well, what's your eighth pick, Kevin? Or in your top 10, eight?
Oh, okay. Let's see here. Well, I'm gonna have to jump around a little bit because we already got Sleepers Awaken, and so I think this is my last one in my list because we actually agreed on a couple of them. Last one is kind of an easy one, but I got my reasons for it. It's Diamond Ray of Disappearance.
Of course, no brainer.
Yeah, it's the big thing for me was just kind of how cool it was, the way they did it to introduce all the Skeletor's villains, and you know, the henchies and stuff. It had a roll call, and it was really easy, but it kind of gave a menacing, the music, the everything gave it a menacing, like, hey, these dudes mean business, you know? And so, that was fun. The way the story came around, the end, the climax where it looked like He-Man was pretty much done for, where he's squeezing the diamond and, they start to lose him, you know, he's fading out of existence and stuff, and he crushes the diamond. That's what made the episode for me, was just, there were so many little good things that were kind of commonplace things that you would later see in the series, and, you know, the Skeletor stuff, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. That's the big thing for me. It was just a fun episode. It was on the DVD, the top 10, and it's one of the few that I agree with on the DVD. So that would be my last one, I think, that I've got on my list anyway. Yeah.
Well, it's another good pick. I mean, definitely. So, all right, my eighth one, this is one, again, not a lot of people talk about. For me, some my picks were kind of just things that I remember just when I was a kid, and they kind of like gave me a certain feeling, a memory, but also it's not being corny at all. At least I don't think the ones I've chose, but I like the Region of Ice, because this is the episode where Orko acts like he's He-Man. You know, like you see at the beginning, it starts off, they're all, you know, just having fun. They're all skiing through the snow, but then they all suddenly start disappearing, which is kind of creepy. I was wondering what's going on. And when Man at Arms is there with his version of, you could say, like a lightsaber, like, you know, like, okay, whoever, whatever you are, and he's gone too. But Orko, he doesn't go down to the trap door because, well, he's floating. But when he goes down there, this Ice Lord doesn't know who He-Man is. But the goal is to get He-Man to try to, well, let me just explain. I like that Orko will impersonate He-Man, and the guy's not buying it. The Ice Lord's not buying it. You know, Orko has his own little sword that kind of goes like this, but he, you know, straightens it out, and Orko does use some powers that comes out of that sword to, like, do something that kind of impresses him. And you think, okay, maybe this is He-Man, because he's at first thinking, this can't be He-Man. Look at him, because in your head, you're having a different thought of what somebody's like. And, of course, he has a choice of taking one person as a good token of faith or something, so he chooses Prince Adam, of course, so he can become He-Man. But they have to go to Castle Grayskull, and obviously going to Castle Grayskull, when they go into that snake's mouth, how he described it, like, we're going to have to enter through the mouth of the snake to save this the Ice Lord's daughter. I always thought it was something strange about going through the mouth, something creepy. Of course, it looks like it's the only entrance that you know, but we know there's another entrances and exits to the place. They eventually do get this ice princess, but I like the part when Skeletor was at, like, you know, the controls of, I think it might have been in his throne room, and where he pulls something. You don't know what the hell is going on, but then you realize it, you know, that snake's starting to close. And I don't know how many times it happened, and I know Tyler would at least know. I didn't remember that the thing closing ever really to do something like so the He-Man to try to pop it open. I was like, this is different animation. This is something that catches your eye. Did that happen a lot, Tyler? Because I don't remember.
Not that I can recall, no.
Yeah, see, I think that's the thing. There's just these things that they caught my eye. Something about seeing something different within Snake Mountain. Anytime I seen Snake Mountain and there was something different, I guess I got giddy. And the thought of Orko taking on the role of He-Man to save everybody was cool for me, that he, little Orko that nobody expected would be He-Man, he takes it on, and he keeps a promise. Obviously, it's kind of one of those little episodes, more about, you know, keeping a promise. But I liked it. It's like I said, it's not, again, one of the most amazing, but it's not corny. That's why, even if it's not Tyler's favorite, Kevin's, or a lot of people listening's favorite, it's a favorite of mine, but it's one that you could watch and still you won't think that, oh God, that was something so cheesy I'd never want to watch again. So Region of Ice was in my top 10, and that's one of my... None of these are in a particular order. I'm just getting you in there. Yeah.
No, it's a good episode. I mean, it would be a top 10, probably not even a top 20 for me, but it's not a bad episode by any means, and it is a good episode. So,
yeah.
I hope people are taking notes of all this stuff too, man, and let people know. Like, give people a reason to go back and revisit all these episodes. Because I think we're all, like, Kevin's coming up with a list I didn't expect. Joe's throwing in some zingers I didn't expect. So I think it's good that we're all coming up with a list, you know, that's it's a mixed bag of stuff. And I mean, my last two did show up on this DVD, but, you know, it was more, I just kind of felt like, you know, Dragon's Gift, House Shikardi not showing up on this set like that. It was just a travesty. But I can't argue. I mean, because Evil Seed made it on here, Diamond Ray's on here, and my last two are on here, which the next one would be Teela's Quest.
Okay.
Which, good one. I mean, it's a masterpiece. I mean, it's like, I would say is probably the best sorceress story. And even though she's not in it that much, her presence is pretty prominent throughout the whole episode. And the whole dynamic of mothers in general, because you got Queen Marlena's relationship with Prince Adam to open it, and you got the sorceresses with Teela to close it out. Pretty powerful stuff. I mean, then you got
another one to get you in the heart.
It does. An episode that I found to be kind of sad as a kid and as an adult. I'm like, God, I'm actually kind of getting water in my eyes. Like, it's Linda Garrett's performance at the sorceress, you know, wiping Teela's memory and showing up in her human form, breaking that kind of continuity that's been set up. But you know what? You kind of feel like you can ignore that in certain episodes, given the context of the story. And it's a flawless episode. I mean, it's another beautifully. Nathan, you can kiss my ass, dude.
What's he doing? I can't see what's happening.
He's busting my balls about my passion, the emotion I'm going right now. So he can. He can go watch some shitty, you know, Nitro episode and
what a pansy. I text him what a pansy. I'm surprised he actually looked down at his phone to see it, because I'm sitting here just listening to him. I'm like, oh, come on, break out the violins. What the hell?
Yeah, well, it's because, you know, Nathan actually hasn't taken time to actually sit and watch any of these episodes. I tried to get him, like, no, don't watch them in order. And what to do? He watches them in order, and then he loses interest because he watches some of the shit episodes or, like, mediocre ones mixing them. And, like, no, skip to that one. He's like, no, I'll get to it, man, I'll get to it. Falls asleep and forgets all about it. God. So, but Teela's Quest, yes, masterpiece. Maybe one day Nathan will make it a priority to sit down and watch that episode, and hopefully his girlfriend won't fall asleep during it.
All right. Okay, my another pick of mine in the top 10, and this would be The Witch and the Warrior. Another team-up episode. I mean, you know, begrudgingly, but I mean, as it happens, but you will see that Evil-Lyn and Teela have to at one point during this episode team up because Kothos did his shit, and which I thought Kothos was another kind of weird, strange looking character, but again, he was somebody that was memorable. He was somebody that I even made a custom.
I didn't like him at all.
He was a real arrogant, just he came off or across like prick, just like a prick. He was annoying and arrogant, but I still kind of got a kick out of this character. Like I said, I liked his design, even though we've seen that design, I think, used later on for another character. I can't remember who, but that design was reused, wasn't it, Tyler? If I'm not mistaken, the design of Kothos.
I don't recall it. I think he was given like a different color scheme, I thought.
Oh, maybe that was it. Okay, yeah. Maybe because I was like, I thought he had a different color. Okay, well, that's it. But
yeah,
another character, I guess, that came back. But you knew something was up in that episode, especially the part, you know, when Teela and Evil-Lyn are sitting down and Evil-Lyn takes off her helmet. You see her white hair. It's like, oh my! I remember it was so weird because as a kid, I just assumed she had black hair. I don't know if it was supposed to be black,
as far as I know. For whatever reason, it changed to white. Yeah, it was supposed to be black.
Oh, okay, yeah, because it was weird, and I was like, oh, that's kind of different. But of course, then we see why she removed the helmet because later on, you see like there's this. Oh, there's, you know, Evil-Lyn's helmet. She was probably killed or something. But I liked the teaming up with Evil-Lyn and Teela. And just like I said earlier, where I like seeing when Skeletor do something good, as cool as it was, I still didn't want her to permanently be somebody that was good. But I liked it. It seemed like her and Teela always had their moments together. It was just one that just, it was memorable to me. Not the most amazing episode, but again, another episode that wasn't cheesy. Like, I think everyone that we've said so far, with whatever reasons we pick our top 10, and if it's a lot just to our heart or whatever, but I don't think any of these episodes so far have been corny, but I would suggest watching The Witch and the Warrior if nobody's never seen that, or if you haven't seen it in years, do that one. I'll have one last one, but what's your, do you have a final pick, Tyler? Just one, or did you have two? I couldn't remember.
Kevin, are you all done?
He said, yeah, I think he's,
yeah. Yeah, I pretty much went through everything. So,
okay. Well, my last,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm just saying my last one is Prince Adam No More. Yeah, an episode I thought was okay as a kid, because when I first saw it, I was hoping it was going to be an episode that had Two Bad or Fisto in it, because it was on VHS. Like, what is this? Prince Adam No More? I've never seen this before. Who's in it? Ah, it's the same cast as always. So I thought it was all right. I enjoyed it, but not nowhere near like I do as an adult. Like, I got it. Like, again, another masterpiece by Paul Dini. And, I mean, I kind of feel like the episode speaks for itself. If you're a He-Man fan and you haven't seen it, then, you know, shut this thing off, look it up on YouTube, pull out the DVD. If you haven't watched it, it's self-explanatory. I shouldn't have to tell you why it's such a great episode, you know. So that rounds up my top 10, which I was glad, you know, some of these didn't make it, but I still need to bitch slap everybody else who's not, some of these.
Well, they're all damn good choices, though, either way. And my final one is just like, it, as much as we've been saying this word, at least I has, but The Heart of a Giant. Okay, yes, I wear this mask. There's nothing wrong with my face, just to let you guys know that.
Not according to you.
But no, I know, just to let people know. But growing up, you sometimes get pricks. You get idiots that will call you names for whatever reason. And this episode, just it connected with me. You know, he's judging somebody like this giant, you know, of course, Orko thinks he's a big, bad creature. Something finds out, of course, that, you know, he's not. And, you know, he's actually he's a genius and he's smart. But, you know, he's going to be getting picked up from this traveling sideshow, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's all good what happens there. But just the moral, again, about not judging books by their cover or people, how you look at somebody. It's like I felt like I related to him. Even though we did not look alike, just what he was going through and some stuff I would hear as a kid, I always had this connection with this episode. It is one of my favorites, but I just had this connection. Like, I felt like I knew what he was going through. And it has some good moments. Again, this ain't cheesy, but it has real heartfelt moments. But it's still fun, interesting. And again, a lot of different unique looking characters that, you know, are not in toy form, you didn't see. And of course, some of the characters that you see that are, you know, being caged were like just basically reused characters in different colors, or maybe some not even different colors, as just throwaway prisoners in the background, you know. But it's a special episode. So I'd say if you've never seen The Heart of a Giant, definitely see it. And I think this is where I wanted to say something that annoys me about what I get from some fans who like to pick on the cartoon. Beyond how they said a lot of stuff was corny, they said that cartoon was nothing but, you know, a half hour moment to sit down and have a half hour commercial to sell toys. Yeah. Did you realize? Now, here's the thing. Did you realize everything that we just said? Almost every episode, all these characters were never toys. All these one-off characters and these special, you know, creatures and beings and anything, we didn't even get them in action figure form. In fact, some of the characters, when they showed up in the cartoon, were like, hey, cool, I got that. Yeah, sure, I got that figure. But by the time probably that episode was out, those figures probably weren't even for sale anymore in Half Aries because they were moving on to another wave. But, I mean, yeah, you eventually later, now from the cartoon, hey, there's Oracle, Sorceress, a King Randor that does a different design, but King Randor, but where are all these characters that are so-called, they're there to sell the toys, it's a commercial. Now, see, if you would say that that cartoon episode was nothing but a 30-minute commercial to sell toys, you would assume that every episode of what they're showing, we would have bought. We didn't get that. I tuned in to watch a damn good adventure and something fun every week. Not about selling toys, but I don't know, it irked me. Tyler, I don't know if like what you think about, but that it always pissed me off when people say the cartoon was nothing but an advertisement. I was like, but look at what we just said every episode. It's like, how is an advertisement when we never got none of that stuff?
I mean, some episodes, you know, come off like they shoehorn something like the Dragon Walker in. Which you get, that's a toy advertisement because you feel like this really doesn't make much sense in terms of the story. But for the most part, it's just people being lazy and attacking this stuff, you know. I just kind of feel like people's perceptions of animation. You know what? Maybe people say the same thing about us and about current animation, but I kind of feel like the current animation doesn't have a whole lot of heart to it. I think it's more about just marketing trash, you know, visually and storytelling wise. It's not really to sell toys, because a lot of cartoons out there that aren't really, don't have action figures or not a lot of merchandise for kids to go to your local Walmart and Target and buy. So
and it really shows, though. Doesn't that show how we love the toys and the cartoon, but in two different ways? Because look, my top 10, I'm just looking at them right now. Donna Dragoon. Loved Dragoon. He was some memorable character we all loved. Never got a figure. You never got Driel. Evil Seed. We never got Evil Seed. The Heart of a Giant. We never got Cambro. The Dragon's Gift. We never got Granomir. To Save Skeletor, we never got Shigoro. Witch and the Warrior. We never got Kothos. And, House of Shakoti, we never got Shakoti and Mask as kids. So, and we've never got Malaktha. We never got Stanlin. I think it was just a good point to make, just to show, yeah, like you said, later they shoehorned in, like, you know, Dragon Walker. And I think didn't they even throw Laser Bolt in, like, later, like it was flying, I thought.
Yeah, it showed up in the Christmas special, and it showed up in, I think, a She-Ra episode, I think.
Yeah, but basically, yeah, like you said, a couple things were shoehorned in, but otherwise, all these characters and all these special moments that we remember from certain episodes with these unique characters, we never got them in figure form, but we didn't care about that because we still love the cartoon and those episodes.
That's a good point. It really is. It's a really good observation, Joe. And, I think that's what burns me up about the modern, what's going on with everything in the modern fandom for a lot of the He-Man stuff. It'll be a odd segue, but I mean, as far as like what you're talking about and saying that there was stories, good stories here. It's what I hate about this CalArts style BS with Thundercats or this whatever else they're doing with the modern She-Ra or what they're going to, you know, I don't know. I haven't seen anything what Kevin Smith's going to do. So I'm not going to try to be negative here.
That's okay if you are though.
Well, what I am going to say, though, it's getting tiresome that the excuse is everybody throws that up, whether it's the producers or whether it's somebody who you know, wants to defend the show, they'll go, oh, it's not for you. It's not made for you. Well, guess what, Jack? These stories were made for us when we were kids. And guess what? They were actually well done. They were well animated, and they were us for kids. So are you going to tell my kids that they can't have, they can't have good animation and good stories? You know, don't tell me that. You know, I don't want to hear a stupid excuse to make up for the fact that you decided that this ugly style is maybe the trend right now, or maybe this ugly style is what, you know, they think is good. And I'm like, dude, why is it that people 30 years ago or whatever could run circles around you art-wise? Why is that? And it all boils down to you're settling for less, or you're not having your standards. Because, like I said, when we were kids, we had this. This was the standard. You know, they did good stuff. So don't tell me, oh, this isn't for you this year. Well, looking at it, it looks like garbage, and I don't want my kid to watch garbage, you know?
I gotcha.
And so, that's one of the things that bugs me a lot is just, it's one thing to argue, hey, we're taking a new approach. This is what we kind of like, and there's a reason why we're behind it. That's fine. But when you tell everybody, oh, this isn't for you, well, that's fine, but if it's for my kid, well, I'm going to show him something that's, you know, that was way better when I was a kid. And you mean to tell me that somehow we had to settle, you know? Sorry,
They treated us better, though. You're right, Kevin. Back then, they treated kids with a little more respect that they could use their minds and imaginations. And now, like you said, everything is, that's what the kids like. So, hey, let's just draw everything like that and make everything silly and the big open mouth like that and the big giant eyes, a line for a nose, all the cheapy quick stuff. It's like, you know what? How about you be somebody that's different from the norm? Why don't you take that chance of saying, how about we write this cartoon with impactful stories, good stories, but also draw the art and let kids use their imagination. Don't demean and talk down to them like all we can do is make them laugh every 5 seconds and have the characters laughing every 5 seconds. It's like, be confident in doing something unique and different. It's sad. It's like, yes, that's all they're going to keep delivering. If, you know, of course, everybody says, oh, well, this isn't for you, and you take this and you do that, and everything looks the same. It's just terrible. It's boring. It's like, you shouldn't have stuff. It's not knocking Charlie Brown, but you know that moment when Charlie Brown and all of them would look up and you see their big mouth and just their nose when their head was tilted back? I mean, I even seen that stuff in She-Ra, the Netflix She-Ra. And it looks just the same. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's fantastic animation.
Yeah, but there's more dignity when Charlie Brown characters are doing it than when that shitty She-Ra show is doing it. Like, you almost feel like, even though you're supposed to laugh at the Peanuts game, they're also conveying emotion. She-Ra, they think it's funny for characters to lean back like that. And I, you know, to add my two cents to that, too, like, people are constantly, downing us fans for being upset with all these drastic changes they've taken to our properties, whether it's She-Ra or Thundercats, or even if it's a superhero, you know. And I feel like, hell, Darth Vader was brought onto this world in 1977 and has maintained that same visual story and, just pure evil character all these years, and nobody goes back and tries to recreate what Darth Vader is about or who he is or what he can do. They have left that alone all these years. Like, yes, it's Star Wars, but it's not above being flipped upside down because some, you know, hipster asshole who's trying to make a name for himself in animation or in toys decides, I never really quite got why he was so cool. He's just like a guy with like a bad breathing problem. So I'm going to make that a joke. If he were to do that, it'd have been, you know, hung in front of everybody. And so I often feel like if a character that's old or that old is still relevant today with toys, merchandising, and in for movies, and kids still see Darth Vader as a very prominent villain, well, then people don't have much of an excuse when they want to come in and say that Hordak has feelings this time. Like, he needs to have feelings. And like, no, you don't get it at all.
Yeah, and they should be open to, and that's the thing, they should be open to criticism, because what do they expect when they're announcing, we're doing a new She-Ra, we're doing a new Thundercats? That's brand and name recognition right there, and you know it's immediately, boom, going to be targeting, hey, everybody that grew up with it and hoping they like it. But then if they don't, then it's not for you. But if we would have liked it, it's like, see what we did for the fans? It's always this, you know, hypocrisy and double standard that they always take. It's like, if somebody says, I don't like it, just say, okay, good. You don't like it. But don't say, it's not for you. Because guaranteed they would have never said that if we would have accepted and all embraced it. But it's just like we said from the past. There was things we didn't get a kick out of, and they didn't call us names back then for hating it. But for nowadays, when you say it, we're always getting called names because we don't like something. Like how Kevin said and how he liked to, you know, get Tyler going. Kevin didn't like that damn 87 movie back then, but was he being called names back then? It's like, are you stupid? You know, you don't like it. Well, you know what? This movie wasn't made for you. No, it's called, hey, that's his opinion. So, yeah, that's what needs to change. And hopefully someday people will start being, you know, accepting of other people's opinions as long as, you know, they're not being name-calling back and forth nasty like I say all the time. So, but Kevin, was there anything in closing that you wanted to, you know, plug and mention or something? And Tyler, because I might have to get off here in just a bit, but I'll pass it back to you, Kevin.
Oh, right now things are a little slow, so the I'm doing a lot of commissions right now, and I'm working on an idea. I've got a few ideas kind of percolating, and I'll be able to share more when I feel like it's comfortable that I can share. Details and, you know, kind of keep the, legally speaking, keep the property safe. But okay.
But where can they contact you for, you know, commissions?
Plug your shit, Kevin. Plug it all. Yeah. In the email. Tell them where to go.
I'm KevHulk73 on Instagram. There you'll see a lot of my artwork and stuff, and you can peruse the type of stuff I do. I have Kevin Sharp Art on Facebook. You can also check out artwork there. And I'm also on DeviantArt. I don't use DeviantArt quite as much nowadays, but every now and then I'll upload some more stuff. So it's Kevin-Sharp on DeviantArt. And right now, you know, I was doing some Marvel stuff, and I've got a little slowdown in between things, gigs. And I'm just doing commissions right now, and you're more than welcome to hit me up. And I'm just thankful to be here with you guys. Love the property. Love to be able to just BS and talk about it and stuff. And thank you, Joe. Thank you, Tyler. Thank you, Nate, for having me on, because it's a blast. Always a blast listening to you guys talk. So thank you.
Yeah, it was a blast having you on.
Absolutely, bud.
Yeah, the bird agrees.
Sorry about
you're
that.
Fine.
I'll tell you a little short story. I had to. What happened was, we at our house, we have a couple. You know, we have a couple of birds, and we have some Chihuahuas, and they just going crazy this evening. And no matter what happens, stepson comes in a room. He's just, dogs are losing it. Just stupid stuff like that, and I just could not get it to be quiet. So I came out to where my fiance works, and I'd done live streams from here before and thought everything was cool, but the bird decides tonight that he wants to be a YouTube star, so I apologize.
That's fine. Don't
not a problem at all, dude.
But thank you. I really appreciate you guys having me on. It's fun. I want to do it again whenever
when you come back, we will do that Shadow Skeletor episode and probably meet like a character bio on somebody too or something like that. Or
sweet.
Or even just talking about your work, working on He-Man in general, too. Just, like, specific. I know we discussed a lot of that last time we were on, but it's just fun discussing you drawing He-Man. Like, that's a fascinating topic. So maybe that's something we could talk about.
Oh, definitely. Have fun. Yeah. I purposely didn't say anything about any of the other stuff going on with He-Man right now, just because I'm trying to stay out of it, you know, because I have my personal feelings, but I, you know,
we get it. Plus, I'm sure people don't want to, you know, probably, I don't know if they want to hear it again. I mean, since we last week's was pretty depressing, that episode, it really was. I mean,
yeah, Tyler was definitely out of that one.
I am going to do my best to refrain from saying anything else, but I will say if Kevin Smith and the rest of those guys do anything to mess with the mythology and kind of treat the show as like, oh, I don't like that, so I'm going to do this, they will become Public Enemy number one in my book. I mean, I will make no bones about it. I give my word. Right now, I've said my piece about it, and I won't say anything else until the trailer drops and the show comes out. If they screw it up, I swear to God, like it'd be nothing but malice towards those guys. And I like Kevin Smith's films, but
that'll be an interesting episode if, like, when something happens. So hopefully it'll be good, because I'm having faith. Hopefully they'll do something great with it. I definitely have more faith in what they're doing than what was done with She-Ra. So this, like I said, I'm very curious to see what's done with it. But like you said, only time will tell when we finally have that first trailer or even an image that drops. But, well, I was going to say, you know, guys, if you're new to the channel, make sure you like, subscribe, share, and ring that bell so you can always be notified when we go not when we go live. Just ring the bell. But, well, it'll show you when we have new videos up, which is coming tomorrow.
When the video gets posted.
Yeah. You know, when the video gets posted. And happy birthday to Zen Brown. I know it's your birthday today. And happy belated birthday to James Etock. I had his birthday day a couple days ago. So I don't know if you guys are still going to hang around and do something. I'm going to have to get out of here. But yes, Kevin, it was a blast having you. And of course, Tyler, talking with you every week always makes my it makes my day out of the week.
Doesn't so,
it does. It does, man. So until next time, have a powerful day.
Right there. Mary Ellen Moffat. She broke my heart.
No one's going to get this.
That really sounds... Mary Ellen Moffat. Damn it, I don't know. You're going to have to tell me now. What is it? Kevin, do you know? Wait.
It's from Jaws.
Oh, of course.
Hooper says it. You know, since Kevin's drawing him and Nathan asked him, but you get... You know, Nathan, like, I don't know. Some fan. It's not your fan.
All right, well, I'll see you guys next time, and see you.
All right, Joe. All right.